So thank you very much for the invitation to give this lecture. It's a great honor, and thank you for the very nice introduction. So the subject of my talks may be somehow maybe not very much related actually to the program, but somehow it's mostly something between number theory and Lie groups and geometry, but in fact there is quite a lot of connections with dynamical systems and ergodic theory. So the first two lectures will be about irrational quadratic forms, and the last lecture will be about some technical tool which is involved in the proof of results, which I talk about during the first two lectures. So the first lecture will be mostly formulations of results and maybe some indications about sketches of the proofs. The second lecture I'll try to give more technical exposition. So I will start with Oppenheim conjecture, which is, and this is was actually that's 1986, so it's probably it's many people here had about my talks on the same subject for several times, so it will be a repetition of that. So it's the theorem this is which proves the conjecture of Oppenheim, which was conjecture in 1929. It's actually the conjecture was at the end of the paper, which was essentially Oppenheim's thesis. And this is about values of irrational quadratic forms at integral points. So the theorem, we consider indefinite irrational quadratic forms. So indefinite is not either positive definite or it's neither positive nor negative definite. And irrational means that it's not a multiple of irrational form. And there is a restriction on number of variables. The number of variables should be at least 3. Now, actually, originally, Oppenheim was, restriction was slightly stronger that n is at least 5. And that was the motivation for that was, so he considered this as an analog of the Mayer's theorem, which says that if you have a rational quadratic form in 5 or more variables, indefinite, then it represents 0 over rational numbers. And for, and this theorem, so it actually can be considered as some kind of analog of that Mayer's theorem. So it states that we have such a form, then for every positive epsilon, there exists non-zero integral vector such that the value of the form at this vector is an absolute value is not greater than epsilon. So, of course, for rational forms, we have a strict equality that Q of x is equal to 0, but of course for irrational forms we cannot have this, but actually for irrational forms it also can be stated in this way. Now, there is a slightly stronger formulation of this which says that is that under the same conditions that actually the set of values of this quadratic form at integral points is dense in R. Yeah, and it's slightly stronger, so it's actually from the theorem above, one immediately gets that the set of values, if we take the closure of the set of values, it certainly contains either R plus or R minus, but to get that it will be entire, that is dense in the entire real line, it's slightly more complicated, but the proof is, actually can be extended to prove this. It's not a multiple of a rational form. So the ratio of at least two coefficients is irrational. So for example, if we normalize the form as such one of the coefficients is 1, then at least one of the other coefficients should be irrational. Okay, so now it was state 29, and there was quite long story when it's to prove this, and maybe before I explain this story, so it's first it's one simple remark, so if it's proved for some smaller n 0, then it's also proof for all bigger n, and this is very simple to show, because if we have a form in n variables and n is greater than n 0, then you can find a rational subspace of a dimension n 0 such that the restriction of this form to this subspace will satisfy, which will have the same properties as this, the original form. It will be rational and it will be indefinite. And so it's not absolutely trivial, but it's an easy exercise. And so it's, yeah, so first important result was the substantial achievement was the proof of this for n is 5, but only for diagonal quadratic forms is due to Davenport and Hellbron. And, but for general forms, so it was quite long series of work with Davenport for many different co-authors, and it's more or less culminated in, I think, in a paper in late 1950s, where it was eventually proved for n is equal to 21, and therefore for all greater n. Now it's, maybe before I go to explanation what is involved in the proof, so there is a conjecture which is not for quadratic forms but for the product of linear forms, and so it's similar to Oppenheim conjecture. So if you have a product of three linear independent linear forms, so it's a cubic form but of a very special type, and if we assume that if the lower bound of epsilon values of this form at integral non-zero points is greater than zero, that this should be the multiple of a rational form. And so this was, yeah, this is still a conjecture, and so it's, and it seems to be very difficult. Now, it's actually these two conjectures were so more or less were one of the main parts of the old paper by Cassels and Swinnerton Dyne in 1955. And so it's somehow they considered these two conjectures about quadratic forms and about products of linear forms. And maybe reading the paper, somehow it's there was an impression that they probably considered the conjecture about product of linear forms somehow a little bit simpler. And the reason for that, maybe just I mentioned it just in a minute. So it's, now it's, there is a quite, so essentially a reformulation of this number theoretical Oppenheim conjecture in terms of, so there was a dynamical formulation, and which is the following. So it's, we take an orthogonal group of a quadratic form with two pluses and one minus, and so special orthogonal groups is a three-dimensional group which is locally isomorphic to SL2R. Now this group belongs, of course, to SL3I, so it acts on the space of lattices, unimodular lattice in three-dimensional space. So this is SL3R by SL3Z. And the statement is that any bounded orbit of this group in this space should be compact. So this is completely opposite to the situation when we have the hyperbolic dynamics. So when we cannot say, so there is a, if we take replaced in SO2 1 2 by 1, then SO1 1, it will be one-dimensional group. And then it becomes geodesic flow on the this SL2R by SL2Z. And, of course, there is a bounded orbits of which are extremely complicated. So it's, the closure could be essentially anything. So it's, now it's, yeah, so I said this is a reformulation. And in some sense, it's, it was already in this paper of Cassius Sinaiton Dias, it was not explicitly stated, and maybe even they didn't realize that this is a reformulation, but somehow there's all ingredients are essentially there. Now, there's this statement about this product of linear forms, free linear forms, and then it says if we have, then there's a reformulation, also dynamical reformulation, which says that if we have instead of S of 1, we consider the diagonal group of its two-dimensional group, subgroup of SL3R, so this is quite similar to what was discussed in Katok's talk and maybe in other talks here. And so the statement will be conjecture is that if we take a bounded orbital of this group in the same space, then this bounded orbit should be compact. So this looks as a very elementary statement, but somehow it's still unproved. And so recently there was quite substantial progress, and just I probably mention this is in a minute, but somehow there was no, still the, in general it has not been proved. Now, of course, there is a quite, it's possible to generalize the conjecture about from, instead of products of free forms, it's possible to consider products of n forms, and so the similar conjecture. And now there is a, here the counterexample, which is for NX2, which is also gives a counterexample for quadratic forms, so we take x1 square minus lambda x2 square, so it's the product of these two linear forms, x1 minus square root of lambda x2, x1 plus square root of lambda x2, and then we take lambda such that which is irrational, but such that square root of lambda, this would take continuous fraction development, then all members of this will be bounded, then it's gives counterexample to both statements for dimension 2. Now it's there is a reformulation of this number theoretical conjecture for in dynamical terms. So it's again it's we consider diagonal subgroup of group of all diagonal matrices in SLNR and take the space of lattices in Rn, unimodular lattices, then it will be SLnR by SLnZ, that any bounded orbit in, of this diagonal group in this space should be closed. And so this is straightforward generalization of the conjecture for n equals 3. Now it's already in this paper by Cassels and Sinaiton Dias, so it was shown that the conjecture about products of free linear forms implies Littlewood conjecture, which has very elementary formulation, and again, it's formulated by Littlewood in about 1930, and it says that if you take two irrational numbers, and it's actually for rational, if one of them is irrational, it becomes trivial. We take two irrational numbers, alpha and beta, and then we take the product low limit of n, and then it's not exactly integral part, it's the distance of n alpha to the closest integer multiplied by the distance of n beta to the closest integer, then it's this low limit is zero. Now, in relation to this statement about cubic form, so it's, you can consider this linear form as n and alpha minus m1 and beta minus m2, then becomes a cubic form. So it does not. So of course the lower bound for this will be zero because we have n. But somehow there is some rather simple argument which actually shows us how to get this Littlewood conjecture from the statement about cubic forms. Now there is this slightly stronger statement that we replace by this distance to the closest integer by the fractional part, then it becomes not true, but then there is this simple counterexample. Now, so I said this about the, rather recently there was a important paper by Manfred and Anatoly Katok and Elon Linderstrauss, where they, in the case of Littlewood conjecture, they showed that the set of counterexamples, you know, one of the consequences of their work is the set of counterexamples for the Littlewood conjecture has Hausdorff dimension zero. So it's very tiny set. So if it's non-trivial, it's very tiny. But still, it's, and the proof actually based on a lot of technology from ergodic theory, Lie groups, so it involves work of Katok and Spatzer, and also at some point there is a Ratner's theorem. So actually maybe for this Littlewood conjecture, maybe it's not exactly needed, but for a more general situation which they consider it's needed, and also it involves a lot of which was developed by Katok and Ian Cylinder, and also by Elon Linderstrauss. Actually there's a different parts in the proof which uses different technology. But again, it's Hausdorff dimension zero, and somehow it's not clear how to go from this to the trying to prove the conjecture in general. Okay, so this is more or less some quite, it can be considered the first part of my lecture today. So now second part will be what could be called quantitative Oppenheim conjecture, and this is the following. So again we consider consider the same quadratic form Q, and so it will be a number of variables will be again at least three. And so there was statement that you would take the set of values of this quadratic form is dense in R, so it can be reformulated in the following way. So we take, consider this inequality that Q of X is between A and B, then there exists X and Zn such that which satisfies this inequality. So this is just a reformulation of the statement that Q of Zn is dense in R. Now it's the question, so how many solutions of this inequality we have, integral solutions. Of course, this number is is infinite, but so therefore we have to consider solutions in some bounded sets, and so the sets, and so we consider just more or less a generalization of balls. So we take some positive continuous function of the sphere, and then it's, we can consider set where the norm of the set of vectors is such that norm is not greater than this value of this function V divided by norm V. So this is some kind of star-like set. And then we take dilation of this set by T. So it's actually from, you can assume that this is just a ball. So it's an ellipsoid, and so it's actually more or less a general case. And now we consider number of solutions of this inequality in this set T omega. So also we can consider the set where, yeah, so here it actually should be, X should be in Rn. So take the domain, so X in Rn, such that intersection with T omega with the set of solutions of this inequality. So this is an open set. And somehow the natural assumption, the natural conjecture would be that you would take a ratio of nq omega over vq omega, then it's when t tends to infinity that limit should be 1. And so I will say what is actually true. Now, for this volume, so it's actually there is a very simple asymptotic formula, which is, so it's up to some coefficient which can be computed. This will be b minus a multiplied t to n minus 2. So when t tends to infinity, we have this asymptotic formula. And now, so it's, now there's a sum, now the statements. And so it's, yeah, so first we consider, we fix P and Q, so it's, and we consider the space of quadratic forms of signature PQ and discriminant plus minus 1. So somehow it's convenient to assume that P is not less than Q, so just if we multiply a form by, if necessary, by minus 1, then we can assume that. Now it's, so such theorem is in joint paper with Dunning in 1993, and so it's, yeah, so we assume that P is at least 2 and Q is at least 1. Then for any rational form in this OPQ and any interval A and B, we have that lower limit will be at least 1. So more or less this is the statement of this natural conjecture that limit is 1, but first we have to replace limit by lower limit and replace equality to 1 by inequality. Now there is a, there is a stronger, somehow a little bit stronger statement that is this bound is uniform over compact sets of forms. And actually there is a statement which is about the assumption of irrationality of the form. So we assume that the number of variables is at least 5, then for any positive epsilon and any compact subset of K of this OPQ, so the set of quadratic form signature PQ, we have quite a good lower bound, that the number of integral solutions will be greater than some constant which depends only on epsilon and Q and multiplied by this volume VQ omega of ABT. So there is a quite good bound. So now it's, here's, there is a 5, so we cannot replace by this by 3 and 4, exactly for the reason that for 3 and 4, there are these rational forms which do not represent 0. But for 5, every rational form represents 0, and so therefore we have this, so we have this statement. Oh, yeah, sorry, it should be it's minus epsilon. Yeah, so A is minus epsilon, B is plus epsilon. So it should be, there is no. So this is point. Yeah. No, okay. So it's, sorry. Thank you for. Yeah. No, so so the MQ omega minus epsilon t, and here should be VQ omega minus epsilon t. So it's, there is yeah, so it's, and yeah. So we cannot. Okay. So now what is actually true for about asymptotics. Now it's, before I go to asymptotics, so it's now something about the proof of this theorem with Dennis. So it's actually, it was heavily based on Ratner's liquid distribution theorem and on some, or some modifications of this, of Ratner's liquid distribution theorem for unipotent flows. But so for some reason which I explain a little bit later, so it's possible to get only lower bounds and not upper bounds or asymptotics. And actually these reasons are not technical because yeah, actually there is no asymptotics in general. So it's, and now it's let me now give you statements of theorems which were proved by in joint paper with Alex Eskin and Shachar Moses. And this is the following. So it's actually to get this asymptotic formula, we have to assume that, yeah, there should be some assumptions on the signature of the form. So again, P is at is not less than Q, and we assume that P is at least 3, and Q is at least 1. Now we have this, the number of variables should be at least 4. And then we have that, and then we have this asymptotic formula that NQ omega ABT is asymptotically equivalent to the volume of the corresponding domain. So it's, so this is lambda Q omega B minus A T to N minus 2. And this is true for any irrational form. Okay, so yeah, so we have, of course, in general, we have this assumption that n is at least 3. So it's the only two cases which are left is signatures 2-1 and 2-2, and it turns out that it's for these exceptional signatures actually is not true that in general that we have an asymptotic formula. So it's yeah, so it. Yeah, so it's the exact statement that for every positive epsilon and every interval A and B, one can find an irrational form. So it's either signature 2-1 or signature 2-2. And we have an infinite sequence of Tj which tends to infinity where this number of solutions will be greater than constant Tj to the Q. So it's just what could be assumed from the asymptotic formula above, but there is an additional term which log Tj to the power 1 minus epsilon. And no, actually it's more or less sharp, so it's actually this log Tj to the power 1 minus epsilon can be replaced more or less by any function which is less than log T. Yeah, no, so it's so the ratio with log T tends to zero. Now it's, yeah, it's actually the, for 2-1 and when AB is minus epsilon, it was test, you know, observation by Peter Cernak, and then there's, and the proof, and the counterexamples more or less based on the essentially Bell construction. So we take rational forms, so we take irrational forms which are extremely well approximated by rational forms. And this is, and so then we get counterexamples. Now, so let me emphasize so that, for example, for n equals 4, when n is equal to 4, we have two possible signatures, 3-1 and 2-2. And for 3-1, we have asymptotic formula, and for 2-2 is not. So it's somehow could be a little bit surprising, but and more or less the explanation is yes, so it's if we take SO3-1 it's local isomorphic to SO2C and SO2-2 is the product of SO2R with SO2R. So it's somehow this is in some sense the reason why it's we have this difference. Okay, so now there is this some statement about upper bounds, and this is more or less and this is proved. And so the statement we have, and so for lower bounds, this is results of Dunning, which is uses a lot of ergodic theory. This statement about upper bounds actually doesn't use essential ergodic theory. It uses some technique which I explain a little bit later, which is some flows, some homogeneous flows, but it doesn't use ergodic theory. And so and the statement about upper bounds, so again we have the same condition that about the signatures, that we exclude two exceptional signatures, 2-1 and 2-2, then we have somehow uniform upper bound over all quadratic forms that belongs to a complex set. And for exceptional signature, we have to add this logarithmic term. And somehow we cannot do better for these two exceptional signatures. Now, so there's this. Okay, now what can we say about exceptional signatures? And this is. So there's a two exceptional signatures. One is 2-2 and one is 2-1. So for any of these two signatures, there are counterexamples, but somehow they're constructed in a very specific way. And somehow natural conjecture would be that this is the only way to construct counterexamples. And in a certain sense, we can prove this conjecture for 2-2, but we cannot do this for 2-1. Now the exact formulation for 2-2. So it's for the quadratic form of signature 2-2. So it's so there is this definition. So we say the quadratic form of signature 2-2 is extremely well approximable by split rational forms, and this is EWAS, so it's abbreviation. So if for any positive n there exists a split integral form, so split means that it's of a rational numbers, it can be in some basis can be written as x1, x2 plus x3, x4, maybe with some rational coefficients. And a real number lambda such that norm of lambda q minus q prime is not greater than lambda 2 minus n. So it's, so this form somehow belongs to vector space, so we can consider some norm, and then we have this condition. Now it's, for example, if the ratio of two non-zero coefficients of the quadratic form is Diophantine, so then Q doesn't belong to this class, EW. It's not extremely well approximate by split rational forms. Now this is a reminder what is a Diophantine number. And now there is a more recent result, actually it was published just this year, but in Annals of Mathematics, but somehow obtained about 3 or 4 years ago, and which says that if we have quadratic form Q, which is not extremely well approximate by split rational forms, and there's also an assumption that zero doesn't belong to this interval AB, then we have this asymptotic formula. Now, if zero belongs to AB, so its statement could be modified to be also true, but there's some additional form which, additional terms which could be easily controlled. Okay, so now it's there is some corollaries from these results about signature to two, which is related to which is quite fashionable subject, which is called quantum chaos. So how I'm not responsible to the connection, but somehow it's, so it's related to the distribution of eigenvalues of Laplacian on manifolds, and here the manifolds is a torus, so it's flat torus, and now we can consider the following problem. So we take a two-dimensional torus, and we take the eigenvalues of Laplacian. So torus is associated with this quotient of R2 by a lattice, and then there is a binary quadratic form which is associated with a dual lattice, and the eigenvalues of Laplacian are exactly the values of this binary quadratic form, which this Q of Mn, it's okay, this is formula for that, it's 4 pi square multiplied by norm of this linear square norm of the norm of this linear combination. Now we look at this eigenvalues, so it's according to the general theorem of Heron-Weyl. So we have that asymptotically number of, in this case, number of the eigenvalues will be constant Cm, which is area of m divided by 4 pi, and this is asymptotically will be Cm over t. So this is, of course, it had been known before Weyl, but it also could be considered as a special case of the Weyl's asymptotic formula. Now, roughly speaking, if we take all eigenvalues between 0 and t, then we have approximately t eigenvalues. So the gaps between two subsequent eigenvalues somehow should have order 1. And so there is a very famous and very difficult conjecture, which is due to very, very tough conjecture, which says that for generic torus or generic two-dimensional manifolds, actually we have the gaps. So we take eigenvalues lambda I of M. Okay, so it's I plus 1 M lambda I plus JM. So we fix J, so it would take J plus 1 subsequent eigenvalues, and then we take, so it will be J plus 1 numbers. So then we get J intervals, so it's then the, so then we move everything to 0, then the asymptotically, distribution should be Poisson for generic torus. And so we cannot prove this conjecture, but there is a result which could be considered some kind of approximation to that. And this is about pair distribution of eigenvalues. So Weyl formula says what is the asymptotic distribution of the set of the number of eigenvalues which are not greater than t. But now we consider the following quantity, which is Rm of ABT. And this is the number of pairs GK. So we take eigenvalues lambda JFM, which is not greater than T, lambda KFM not greater than T, and J is not equal to K, such that the difference between these two eigenvalues is between A and B. And we divide this by T. So because the number of eigenvalues which are not greater than T is of order of T, so it's, this should be of order of 1. And now it's the statement of the theorem, which is actually a consequence of the theorem about 2-2, so it's actually written 2001. It's in the same paper, which is what just published this last year. And so the formulation is the following. So we take a flat to torus, and we just rescale this torus such that one of the coefficients is 1, and we take two other coefficients, will be A1 and A2. And after that, there is a Diophantine condition, which is this. So it's, we assume that for, so that there exists a positive end such that for all triples of integers, we have that this maximum of epsilon beta phi pi minus pi of q is greater than 1 of q to the n. Huh? Oh, yes, it should be, n should be ketted, yeah. So there's a, yeah, then it should be, you're right, should, here should be capital N. So already there are two typos. Yeah, so then for any interval which doesn't contain zero, so it's, again, it's somewhat technical condition. Yeah, and it's actually in this case it contains zero, so it more or less controls the multiplicity. But in this case, it also is possible to control multiplicity. Then we have that this limit, again, it should be another type. It should be capital T here. That the when T tends to infinity, that limit of Rm of ABT, so this is should be exactly what it should be. So it's Cm squared of B minus A. Now it's, in particular, one of the coefficients is Diophantine, then we have this. So for example, one of the coefficients A1 of A2 is an algebraic number, then this is true. Now, again, it's, yeah, and so also one, just one of the consequences that the set of the torus which for the, which this is not true, again, has Hausdorff dimension zero. So this is, okay, so now it's, yeah, somehow it's, again, so there's, I mentioned this condition of the Hausdorff dimension zero, so it appears in work of Einsiedler, Katok, and Lindenstrauss, and here also it's, yeah, but probably for a different reason. So it's, so there it's most related to kind of some kind of ergodic phenomena, and here it's just essentially to a Diophantine condition. Okay, so it's now in the announcement of my lecture, so I said that it will be not so both positive indefinite quadratic forms and positive definite forms will be considered, and now I will talk about work of Friedrich Goetze and also Jenkins and Goetze. And now it's what is the question. So it's we assume that Q is a positive definite form. So we take an ellipsoid where this form is not greater than S, and we want to count the number of points in this ellipsoid. Now, of course, it's a very classical result, which is, goes back to Gauss, that asymptotically the number of points in, say, in a ball of radial size, asymptotically will be the volume of this ball. But in this case, interesting problem will be what is the error term, and so it's, you know, so the error term it will be number of integral points minus the volume and divide, and okay, so the volume is of the order of, so here it will be, so Q of X is not greater than S, so it will be the radius S 1 over 2, so the volume will be S to, asymptotically S to N over 2. And so it's quite easy to get error term S 1 and 2 minus 1, but, and actually for, if N is 2 is, yeah, there's a famous second problem that error term should be, this exponent should be 1 half plus epsilon. But for higher dimension, it will be N over 2 minus 2. And actually, this is the subject of this paper, that this papers of Goetze and Jenkins of Goetze, that if starting with N is at least 5, and so here it's slightly different notation, so dimension is denoted by D. And so it's, you know, again, the notation, so we assume that we have, so it's a slightly more general problem, so we consider not just the ellipsoid, but translation of this ellipsoid and count the number of integral points in this translation. So this is what is called volume Z of Re plus 1 minus A, and subtract the volume of the this ellipsoid and divide by the volume of the ellipsoid, then it's the statement that, yeah, first if we take any positive definite form without any assumption about irrationality, then this will be actually will be of order r to minus 2, as, so it's not greater than some constant multiplied by r minus 2. And if it's, if the form is irrational, then we can replace this capital O by small o, so that actually we multiply this by, yeah, so delta of Ra by R square, then the limit will be zero. And this is for irrational forms. Now it's, so this is starting when D is at least 5, and for, yeah, so it had been proved before by Jenkins and Goetze for dimensions starting with 9. And the proof is, so the proof of theorem is about indefinite form, so maybe just some historic detour. So it's for indefinite form, so first, again, I said that it was quite a long history by Davenport and others, and the methods of the proof were based on analytic number theory, and the final proof was based using some dynamics ergodic theory, and actually was to the theory of unipotent flows. So it's, and actually there was an observation of Raghunath, and actually theory of unipotent flows somehow is related to Oppenheim conjecture. And actually the main point in the proof was some proof of Raghunathan's conjecture in some special case. So it's, in general, Raghunathan's conjecture was proved by Ratner, is orbit closure theorem. Now here methods of ergodic theory cannot be applied at all, because somehow the corresponding group is compact, and so it's nothing works. So it's, and here it's in some sense is a method of the proof is some variation of analytic number theory. And actually in the second lecture I will try to explain something about the proof actually with some modifications. Now what is the consequence of corollary from these results of Goetze and Denkunst and Goetze? So it's, yeah, no, so it's, yeah, there is the corollary which is stated above, but now there is this Davenport-Lewis conjecture. This is about gaps between values of positive definite forms at integral points. Yeah, no, so we take this quadratic form. Yeah, no, so here there is a slightly more general statement, so, but it's just as possible to just assume that A is zero, so we take the set of values of Q of at integral points. Now we get this set of points which is Q of M, where M and Zn. Okay, so M and Zd. So the number of this is actually when D is, okay, it's, yeah, M and ZD, and Q of M is, say, not greater than T. So the number of this will be, say, T to D over 2, so it's actually quite big. So it's quite big set. But we're interested in gaps between subsequent values. So in principle, it should be the distance between subsequent values should be extremely small, because it's, we have too many numbers, so it's, we, but for rational forms it's actually not true, because the values are, or you have integral form, the values are integral numbers, so it's, the distances should be at least one. But for irrational forms somehow, so maybe forms of Diophantine actually should be small. And now there was a conjecture by Davenport and Lewis about, so we take, so assume that Q is a rational form, then gaps between subsequent values should tend to zero. And actually it had not been proved for any D, so before this work of Denkunst and Goetze, so it's in Goetze. So now it's as a corollary for from their work, there is a, so because there is this there's this estimate for the error term, so it's actually, so it proves this Davenport-Lewis conjecture for dimensions. Okay, so maybe right here. Dimensions starting with 5. So still probably it's true for 3 and 4. Certainly there are no, so there are no error terms for 3 and 4 of this type, but still maybe it's true that the gaps between subsequent values will be actually will tend to zero. So this is somehow more or less the content of my first lecture. So it's probably it's better to stop now rather than begin the second.